Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Besides the candy and dressing up as ghouls and goblins, where did Halloween come from? And did you know the Celtics actually had a big part of it? Today we're going to find out a little bit more about Halloween. And Morgan Daimler is here to talk about the Celtic roots, and we may touch on a few other subjects. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, author and amateur folklorist, the one and only Morgan Daimler.
Hello, Morgan.
Hi, Tony. Nice to be with you here tonight.
I'm excited to have you here, too. And when you first came on, I was like, we're going to talk about Celtic and Irish. And I'm like, oh, God, I hope she has an Irish accent. But, well, you have the red hair, so that's about as close as we're going to get, right?
I do.
Are you Irish, have an Irish background?
Yeah, my grandfather was Irish, so I have that connection to it. And I've been there several times. It's a really wonderful, fascinating place. So,
well, looking at your books, there's tons of books about Ireland and fairies and Celtic and all this stuff. What got you into your interest with the Irish legend and folklore and all that stuff?
Sure. Well, I definitely think, you know, my grandfather was a big part of it, and I grew up sort of in the Irish American community in my area, so you know, there was always sort of a lot of emphasis on the connection to the heritage. Mm-hmm. And you know, you sort of grow up with certain stories and certain ideas, you know, the idea of fairies, for example. And I was kind of an interesting kid, so you know, I had a lot of odd experiences and things that I sort of contextualized that way, that's how I understood them. And as I got a little older, I wanted to really understand what everything was about, and you know, take it beyond sort of the things that get repeated in the family, or you know, that my friends would say, and find out what was really behind it all, so to speak.
Right.
Very, very appropriate given the name of your show.
Truth be told,
I was just looking for the truth.
Right. And that, you know, that's with being a Sagittarius, seeker of truth. That's how it came about. But
that's perfectly legitimate.
Right.
Yep. And I just started looking into the folklore and the mythology. And, you know, it's one of those subjects, once you start looking into it, there's so much to it. And the more you learn, the more you realize how much there is to learn. And then you're done for. It's just all over.
I always found it fascinating. You know, the UK, Scotland, Ireland, all those little islands has so much history of thousands of years. And you're like, how did these people create such a history on this? These small islands, really. I mean, it's bigger islands, but it's small. I mean, comparably to the landmass of Europe and, you know, North America and South America, it's like huge. I mean, it's, or small comparative. So it's
hey, there's a huge amount of history and culture there. It's actually really amazing when you look into it, just how much, you know, archaeologically even is just there, you know.
Right. Even talks about, you know, Romans and stuff was, you know, like Roman ruins and stuff there that you're like, Romans? How in the hell did they get
there? Yeah, well, there's some fascinating stuff all over the place. And, you know, in Ireland, you get into, because of the Norse influence, you have, you know, some fascinating crossover there.
Right.
With some of the Norse material. So lots of layers of culture.
Well, you know, Halloween's just about a week and a half away, and not even a week and a half, a week and a couple days away. And, you know, we're always known, you know, about, you know, the candy companies are making the money and the costumes and the, you know, big businesses are making money off of it. But a lot of times we lose really the meaning and the origins of Halloween. But a lot of people don't know that the Celtic culture actually had a lot to do with it. And first of all, when you say Celtic, does that just mean Irish, or does that mean, is that, what is, because people are like, what's Celtic? What is that?
Sure. No, that's a good place to start. Celtic is a term for a group of related, a group of cultures that are related by language. So Ireland is probably one of the more well-known ones, but you have Scotland, you have Wales, Cornwall, the Isle of Man, even parts of northern France kind of have this cultural influence going on. And there were others historically that haven't survived to today. But
right.
It's cultures that are linked by a shared kind of root language is what's going on.
So, well, how do we connect Halloween and Celtic?
Sure. So the history of Halloween, when we look at sort of the grand scope of it,
right,
is really complex, and it goes back really, really far, honestly. Obviously, Ireland is my main focus. So
right,
that's
right.
Sort of what I can speak to. It's also often said to be the birthplace or origin of Halloween. So might be a little biased with that
right,
personally.
Right.
But yeah, but you know, there's a lot of Neolithic monuments in Ireland. Those are things like Newgrange is one a lot of people are familiar with. And some of those are aligned to what is called Samhain in Irish, but
right.
Halloween is the English name for the holiday. And what that means is basically they were built so that when the sun rises or the sun sets on that at that time, it lines up perfectly to go inside these. They were usually burial chambers, cairns. And that was always done for some sort of big significant ritual purpose. Obviously, we don't know what anymore, because this is going into like prehistory before any kind of written records, but it speaks to how far back this goes. I mean, you're talking 4,000, 5,000 years.
Wow.
With some of these.
Right.
There's one at the Hill of Tara called the Mound of Hostages, for example, that's lined up to the sunrise at Samhain. And so, you know, you're looking at cultural roots that are just really, really ancient. However you define that, you know, that is ancient. It's the Neolithic.
Right.
And yeah. And then what we start to see when we do get written records are these references to the holiday. That actually is the picture that's up now, is the Mound of Hostages at Tara. We see written references to this holiday, which was this huge significant event where they would have bonfires and kind of the community would get together. The main one that gets talked about a lot is at Tlachtga, which is a hill in Athboy in Ireland. And there's a whole story that goes with it. There's a myth connected to it. The hill is named after a woman many people believe was a goddess. You know, it was a place where they would have these huge celebrations. And one version of the story is connected to it is that everyone would put out their household fires, and then they would light this big bonfire on the hill on Tlachtga at Samhain, and people would take pieces of the fire, basically, and then go and relight their own fires from there, and it would kind of spread. And it was the idea that this was sort of a blessed or protected fire, so it would spread protection to the people who took it, sort of blessing for the new year. There's some debate about that, but some people do think that it was viewed as like the beginning of the new year, the end of the old year. So
was this almost like a, I hate to say it because this is truth be told and we do touch, like a almost like a secret society type of thing? Because it seems like they wore, like I'm looking at pictures, they wore, I'd say costumes, but.
So there's two things going on there. Definitely wasn't a secret society. It was more like public religion.
Okay.
This is sort of what everyone was doing at the time. But the costumes is a good point to touch on, because this particular time of year, there was a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely have these bonfires and these public celebrations. But there was also this idea that besides the human world, there were these other realities, these other worlds that sort of coexist.
Hmm.
And one is the world of what we in English would call fairies, the Ishi, the Ishi, the good folk, and that they were more likely to be out and about and more likely to be interacted with. And that did not always go so well for the humans. And also this idea that there's this world of the dead, which may or may not be the same thing.
Right.
And, you know, that at this time of year, people who had passed on, especially people who had passed within the past year, could come back or would come back. And so it's sort of this time of like high strangeness where there's a lot of crossover with spirits. There's a lot of these potentially dangerous fairies running around. There is just a lot going on. And so besides these bonfires, which had this protective aspect to it, there was also this idea that we see a lot of researchers talk about of people wearing disguises and hence the masks and the dressing up. And, you know, the idea, the way that it's sort of presented in scholarly books on the topic is that people were trying to, if they were out at night, blend in,
right?
I guess would be like the modern American way to put it,
right.
With, you know, anything else that might be out wandering around.
Right. And because I'm looking, I mean, I'm going through some of these pictures and it does, it just seems like they're rituals. Is there any type of rituals that like dances or anything that they do during this time of the ceremony?
Like I said, there's so many layers to all of this.
Right.
Certainly in modern terms, we have some more modern practices that have developed. I should say by modern, this is the problem when you study this material a lot. My concept of modern is
right.
Not like 21st century. I mean, like within the last 100, 200 years.
Modern.
We've developed all these interesting like traditions and practices connected to it, which are sort of a blend of the much older roots of the holiday, this idea of all sorts of spirits being out and being in disguise. And then, you know, as sort of the pagan period went into the historic period and we got Christianity coming in, we get this blend with that. And then we see, you know, this Christian idea of all souls night and all saints night.
Right.
And that kind of gets merged in with the folk practices. And so the idea of like trick or treating, that originally started sort of in that blend,
mm-hmm.
where people would go house to house and offer to pray for the souls of the dead.
Oh, wow.
In exchange for what they call them soul cakes, these little cakes that were made. Yeah. It's the origin of trick or treating.
Soul cakes. Are they chocolate? No, just kidding.
You know, if they'd had chocolate back then,
and right,
I
it might
bet
be
they
pretty
been.
Dang good.
Yeah. And then that kind of gets carried forward and blended with this idea of, you know, wearing costumes and being out in disguise. And, you know, as we get into this more modern period, there's also this aspect of mischief that comes in. October 30th, the night before when we celebrate Halloween, is often called is often called Mischief Night. Or some people even call it Devil's Night now. And that was kind of a thing in the early 20th century where like the younger people in the community would just run amok. And if you could find some pictures of some of the stuff they did, it, some of it is really hilarious and just horrifying. Like taking outhouses apart and reassembling them on top of people's barns. And
oh my God, my I have to say, my my father, when they were kids, so my dad's 86, so this, you know, he was born in 1935. So probably in the...
So he, right in this time period.
Right, yeah. So in the 50s, he would tell me about, they actually did that. They, I think, took apart a, like a tractor or something and then put it up on top of a house or something like that. It was, I was like, what? If we would have we'd do that now, we would be in jail. Oh,
so much trouble.
Right, but they did do stuff like that.
You can find some fabulous pictures. They made postcards out of some of them, like cows on house roofs.
Right, right.
there's one kind of famous postcard picture that like all the kids in the town got together and just filled Main Street with all of this random, like there's outhouses and bathtubs.
That's
and
my hometown.
Carriages.
My hometown. We, even when I was in high school, I graduated in 88. So, we would go down Halloween or the night of Halloween and we would tear up the town. Like we would, you know, move cars and tractors and everything. We never put on top of anything, but we would put them in the streets. And the next morning, the parents would say, all right, down to the downtown. I mean, it's a small town, but it would, we'd have to clean it all up.
And that is very traditional.
Yeah.
Traditional Halloween celebration.
Right. And that's, that's look forward to with that.
That's actually how the modern American Halloween with trick-or-treating really became a thing, because the mischief was getting so out of hand and it was getting more malicious, like real damage was being done. Shop owners in particular were not super thrilled getting like windows broken.
Right.
And all sorts of stuff. And there was this woman in this small town who came up with this idea, you know, to keep the kids out of trouble, let's throw them a party and, you know, offer them all these treats and they can come in costume and, you know, make it this whole big thing. And she tried it for several years in a row and it didn't work. And then finally, the third year, it was completely over the top, hours long celebration sort of a thing. And the kids were too tired to go out and like make mischief.
Right. And we're like, we're tired of eating candy.
we're too full and sleepy.
Yeah.
And that kind of spread then from town to town as like, hey, this is a solution, you know, keep the kids occupied. And it became what, you know, what we all grew up with, the going house to house to the neighbors kind of thing, in costume.
But, well, where did my dad used to do trick or drink? So trick or drink, and they would have a drink and then go to the next house.
That's kind of the same as trick
or
treat.
Right, that's just for the adults.
Version.
Let me ask you this, because you know, paganism also had a lot to do with even Christmas. Did paganism contribute to anything for the Halloween season and the Halloween holiday?
Oh, sure. Like I said, it has its older roots, kind of in that later Irish pagan period and the stories that were carried forward from that. You know, the original bonfire celebrations, like at Tlaxcala, for example, those would have been pagan celebrations, kind of a way to, you know, make offerings to whatever gods were being honored.
Right.
And also appease these spirits that were wandering around, offer protection for the homes going into the winter, all of that kind of stuff. And then that got moved forward. And when Christianity came in, a lot of the pagan aspects might have been sort of adapted a little bit to continue forward, but you can still kind of see a lot of them. You know, the idea that the dead come back to visit people, that's definitely still a big thing with Halloween today. The idea that there's spirits, you know, out and about, and you have to be a little extra careful. That's definitely a much more pagan idea than a Christian idea,
right?
Going on there,
right?
Although I will say the story of the jack-o'-lantern, that actually is a Christian story.
Really?
If you're not familiar with, yeah. Well,
do you know, if you know, please
sure.
Tell us about
sure.
it.
Sure. Jack-o'-lanterns originated, most people believe, in Ireland. And I'm not just saying that because I'm pro-Ireland, but they were originally turnips. And this idea of, if you've never carved a turnip, it is definitely an adventure in stamina. They would carve the turnip in order to carry fire safely, you know, from one place to another. It makes a good little fire container. So firstly used for those big bonfires. And the bonfires in Ireland on Halloween continued into, you know, the recent years. They actually still do them. When I was there in 2016, I was there on Halloween and got to see some of them.
Oh, wow, that would have been cool.
Yeah, it really was. But I'm digressing slightly, yeah, right. Sorry. So they would carve turnips in order to carry, you know, coals from the fire. And there's a story that there was this man, and his name was Jack. And sometimes he's called Stingy Jack because there's different versions of the story. And basically, he was not the best person in the world. And he ends up running into the devil one day, as you do, and sort of makes a deal with the devil to have, yeah, those are the carved turnips, to have, you know, luck and fortune and all the things that people, I guess, would, you know, normally make a deal with the devil for in exchange for his soul. But when the devil comes to collect, he manages to trick him into climbing up this tree. And then, you know, kind of using holy words and all that stuff, traps him up there and refuses to let him down until he agrees that under no circumstances will he take Jack to hell. So, you know, Jack thinks, well, this is great. I've got the best of both worlds. You know, I got all this fame and fortune and money and, you know, a good life. And now I don't have to worry about going to hell. And, you know, he lets the devil down. The devil basically is like, you know, curses on you. You're definitely never getting in hell. But when he dies and he goes up to heaven, you know, heaven's also like, oh no, we are definitely not taking you because you were a terrible person. So, you know, he goes the only other option in the story. He goes to hell and the devil starts laughing and it's like, oh no, you made me promise you that I would not take you. And he turns Jack away. And then as Jack is starting to leave, he tosses like some burning hellfire after him. And is like, here, this can light your way. And so Jack puts it in one of these turnips, but he's sort of doomed to wander forever because he can't get into heaven and hell won't take him either. So
that's pretty cool. I've never heard that story before.
Oh yeah, it's a fun story. There's a couple different versions. So,
well, you know, there's always different versions for every religion, every society, every generation. Yes, it's kind of one gets bigger and one.
That's the version I grew up hearing. So that might be like the Irish American version. But,
right.
You know, they're fairly similar across the board.
So, like you said, you know, because Halloween's so close, you know, that's one reason we wanted to have you on, just because a lot of people, like I said, we get wrapped up in the commercial side of it. We really don't know the roots of where it comes from. And paganism, because I think a lot of people think of it as evil, you know, like, or the devil, because you're pagan. Oh, what's pagan? But what is pagan? What does that actually mean when you say pagan? Is it just a religion or is it more spirituality?
Yes and yes.
Yes
no.
And yes and yes. No.
Yep. You know, pagan is often used. It's kind of a blanket term. Some people use it to just mean anything that's not monotheism. Generally, though, like when we talk about it in historic context or modern context, you're talking about people or cultures that acknowledged or honored multiple gods. So like the pagan Irish, you know, we know they have dozens and dozens of different deities that would have been the gods sort of that culture would have looked to. And, you know, most cultures are like that. You can kind of look back historically and see the array of different deities that the culture honored. Most people are familiar with like the Greek and Roman ones, mm-hmm. because we kind of learn about those in school, at least where I am in the US. When we talk about modern paganism, we're getting kind of into what's often referred to as like neo-paganism, which are people who are looking to those same sort of multiple gods, but in a modern, like 21st century, 20th century context. And, you know, they're not any better or worse, you know, as people than pretty much anybody else would be. Definitely not evil, the majority of them.
What? How did the royals of that era, you know, back, you know, mid 1600s, 1500, 1400, whatever it was, how did they look at paganism? How did they look at that? Because it was very Protestant and Catholic.
Yes. The Catholic Church is an interesting thing when you look across the history, because you can kind of watch it getting more antagonistic as time goes by. So we have the written material, the stories. The oldest ones that we still have in writing date to like the 9th century, but they're usually based on things that were copied from earlier material. So we think the writing them down started more like the 5th century,
right,
and then carried forward. And the oldest stories are actually, you know, considering they were being written largely by, you know, Catholic monks, mm-hmm. are actually fairly positive towards the pagan gods. They're much more sort of neutral, at least, in recording the stories. They do sort of try to put a spin on it. A lot of things are written just in a way that sort of connects them to Christian stories. So there's a lot of ideas of, like, you know, things starting with, you know, the story we would find in the Bible. But they actually present the gods and the stories that people shared about the gods in a pretty straightforward way. There's not a lot of trying to like rewrite them or, you know, make it seem like they're not gods. They're called gods. They're referred to that way. They clearly have all sorts of, I guess we would say, like godly powers, mm-hmm. going on. You know, but then you can kind of watch as we get more into what you were just talking about, like the 14th, 15th, 16th right. century, 17th century, where they sort of are increasingly described or, you know, written about more as if they're human characters, or as if they're like very flawed, you know, much more problematic, I guess would be like the 21st century.
Right.
You know, but it's fascinating to kind of watch that change. So like you have a goddess like the Morrigan, who is one of the more preeminent sort of goddesses. She's a goddess.
What was the goddess? Goddess what?
The Morrigan.
How do you spell
the Morrigan?
Morrigan.
M-O-R-R-I-G-A-N.
Oh, there we go.
I think is the common spelling.
Got it.
She's a goddess of war.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Get it,
which,
girl.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, actually, when you look at Irish culture and Irish deities, that whereas most other places, most other cultures you look at, it's usually war gods. In Ireland, it's mostly goddesses. There's several of them that were connected to war. But when we see her in the older stories, she's just sort of a very straightforward, you know, she sort of has a lot of connections to battle and prophecy and kingship and all this kind of cool stuff. But then as you get into that like 16th, 17th century, she's being described as like a demon and like a supernatural negative figure of the night. The modern English word nightmare is sort of connected to this idea of these female spirits that would torment people when they were sleeping. And, you know, she was sort of tied into or compared to that. And it was clearly because at that point, you know, the people writing the stories were much more like antagonistic,
right,
you know, towards these beings, as opposed to how they had been like 1,000 years earlier.
Well, I'm gonna ask this question. It may go back a little bit, but I definitely, because I always, the people in the chat room are my co-host, and I love bringing them into the mix here. And in fact, Star Brother said some great things about the pagans. He said pagans believe that nature is sacred and that the nature cycle of birth, growth, and death observed in the world around us carry profoundly spiritual meanings. Love it. I think that's great. And but Liz says, where did the Celtics originate?
Sure. So this is another one of those complicated layered questions.
Right.
We know that there were people in Ireland and, you know, Scotland, what's now England, all those places, during this Neolithic period. They're the ones who built these stone monuments and cairns and stone circles and all of this. At some point, probably around 500 BCE, we see this sort of moving in of the Celtic culture, and it's something that scholars really aren't 100% sure how it happened. They know that there was at one point a little earlier a bit of a migration with actual people. When the Celtic cultures are coming in, it doesn't seem to be so much people coming in as just the new culture kind of spreading. So we sort of see this shift, basically the beginning of the Iron Age.
I don't know if this map is right, but I just found that map. I don't know if it's right or not, but
yep, the original Celtic language cultures definitely came from sort of the lower right-hand area there, and then kind of moved north and west. So you get them kind of all across Western Europe, basically, at one point, and obviously spread up and into England and Scotland and Ireland, Wales, all of those areas. And then we see other cultures kind of moving into Southern Europe and Eastern Europe and kind of pushing it to where we get sort of the Celtic cultures where they are now. Now, like I said, there are some other theories, like scholars will never agree 100% on anything ever.
Right. No, somebody always has to be right.
Yes. You will find different ideas about this out there. Kind of like that was a great comment about pagans and nature worship, and like probably 85% of pagans would agree with that. And then you will get those 15% that will be like, I have a completely different understanding of this. It's just the way humans are.
Yeah.
We like to be diverse.
It's blue. No, it's not. It's purple.
It's bluish purple.
Yeah, it's bluish purple. Yeah. Well, listen, and anybody in the chat room wants to ask questions, please ask questions. I will definitely ask if it's pertaining to our conversation. I love questions. I do too. And I think it's great when they participate. You've written many, many books. I mean, I'm looking, you can go to Amazon and you can just see how many books you've written. And
it's a bad habit I have.
God bless you. Either you have nothing to do on the weekends or you just like to write. It's because there's a lot of books.
But it's pretty much my full-time job, so.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect. But I was going to ask you, a lot of the books are about fairies, and we can get into a little bit about the fairy because, I mean, you have tons. But I have a question. You know, with truth be told, we talk a lot about UFOs and ghosts and, you know, it's Halloween season. A lot of people are starting to wonder if aliens and ghosts are very similar, which now brings in the fairies. Can fairies be maybe extraterrestrials? Could fairies be ghost-like spirits? What is your take on that?
Sure. So I want to preface this by saying there's sort of two strong camps out there.
Yeah, right. Here we go.
This is why I'm saying this up front. There's people in sort of the ufologist communities who are very adamant that fairies are a historic way to understand aliens and UFOs.
Huh.
That was sort of how people understood them before they had the context of modern technology to frame them in.
Right.
Then there's people, including me, that are more in the fairy folklore, fairy studying communities, who take the exact opposite view that when we see modern stories about aliens and UFOs and things, it's modern encounters with fairies by people who don't have the cultural framework that we used to have to understand them as fairies. And so sort of process them in the way that makes the most sense, which is through that sort of sci-fi alien UFO lens. So I realize a lot of people will completely disagree with what I just said, which is perfectly fine.
Right.
Because like I said, there's very strong opinions on both sides. This debate will probably never see an end. But yeah, there is a huge amount of crossover with fairy folklore and alien and UFO abduction experiences. Things like the time slip, the time difference. You see that with fairies. You see that with alien abduction and UFO stories. Lights through the trees in the woods, circles with fairy rings. It can be mushrooms. It can also be darker grass or dead grass. Obviously, with UFOs, it's usually like a burned area in the ground. People being taken and having either really horrific experiences or sometimes very pleasant experiences.
Like UFOs, some people have great experiences, and some people don't.
there's a really good book by Joshua Cutchin, and it's called Trojan Feast. And it actually gets into all of this. It talks about the similarities, basically, between fairies and aliens, and also gets into Sasquatch a little bit, because there's a surprising amount of crossover there, too.
I was going to say that's a little tiny... I don't know, a fairy like this and a 8-foot tall hairy beast. I don't know how that would be a good mix of the two. But hey, I'm open to it.
Fairy is kind of a general term that covers a lot of different beings. So we have
the
tiny
ones. Oh, so fairies
aren't
just No, really?
No. We have the tiny ones. We also have ones that look very human, that can pass as human sometimes. That's another similarity with the alien crossover,
right?
The idea of interbreeding, I guess we would say. There's hundreds of years, actually over more like 1,000 years, of folklore with fairies that are interested in humans for procreative purposes. Again, I'm trying to be careful how I say this on your show.
Oh, please. You can say however you want. The more controversy, the better it gets, right?
Well, we're definitely sliding right into that.
Right.
And obviously, you know, there's people who talk about stories with aliens and alien abductions that involve reproduction and offspring and things like that. So there's a surprisingly large amount of crossover in the stories. We're just never going to get any agreement on whether it's, you know, aliens through folklore lens or fairies through sci-fi.
And I mean, I definitely think, you know, because of, you know, with Ireland, folklore is a lot about fairies, because you don't hear that. I mean, maybe you do. You hear it in other cultures, but it seems
Iceland.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So
Iceland is another big. Yeah. Iceland is another big place for it. They have quite a lot going on there as well. And like Ireland, that they've done things like reroute roads to not mess with.
Fairy trees or something.
They call them Alfar.
So the government actually have stepped in and said, no, we're not going to take roads this way. We're going to.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that's happened in Ireland. The last time in Ireland, I believe, was in the late 90s. And then in Iceland, it's happened in the 21st century, within the last, I think, 10 years.
So is the fairy, the belief of fairies in Ireland still pretty high?
See, this is a fun question. Because, and this is true in Ireland, this is true in Iceland, this is true in a lot of places that have these sort of beliefs. If you ask people, if you just go up to someone and ask, like, do you believe in the good folk and fairies? Most people will say no. But they will also say, I don't believe in them, but I'm not going to mess with them.
You're like, I'm not, just in case.
And I wouldn't go to that particular location at night because it belongs to them. So there's this sort of like, people won't just flat out say, yes, I believe in them. But there's also this, but obviously they're there. So, you know, I'm not going to tempt fate. I find it's very similar to what we have in the US with ghosts.
Right. Right.
Where if you ask most people, like, do you believe in ghosts? A lot of people will be very like skeptical and rational and like, oh no, of course not. But they will not go into that abandoned asylum at night.
Right. I would.
For anything.
But,
but I would too, but yeah. I live dangerously. Same. So.
Well, if there's snakes, hell no. But anything else, it's weird. I can take a ghost, but I can't take a snake. It just.
I mean, that seems fair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
spiders
just
do it for me.
Yeah, spiders
I'm okay
don't.
With snakes, but
yeah, snakes just
not a fan
yeah,
of spiders.
No. I would tinkle myself if I. All right. So you're telling me that because it seems like all what is portrayed in movies, Hollywood movies, most fairies are good and you know giving us you know wishes and. Granting us wishes, I guess. But you're saying that not all fairies are good. It's kind of like, again, not all aliens are good. What?
Yep. Yep, there's definitely a whole sort of layer of material that's out there. Most of it originally, at least aimed at children, that portrays fairies as all sort of benevolent and helpful and,
right.
and very like echo warriors, like Fern Gully springs to mind. But when we look at the folklore and we look at the folk beliefs, even into like today, like the reason that those roads get rerouted is because the belief is if you cut down that fairy tree or you mess with that Alfakirkjan, that the place of the elves in Iceland,
right.
Very bad things will happen to you. You know, and there's a lot of stories of people who, didn't listen or, you know, for whatever reason did mess with the tree. And then, you know, they don't live for very long afterwards or, you know, assorted unfortunate events occur. The DeLorean car company, actually, the story with them is that the reason they went bankrupt and failed and all of that happened is because when they built their plant in Ireland, they cut down a fairy tree when they were building it, even though they were warned not to. And within, I think it was like a year, maybe a little less than a year, the entire company went bankrupt. And just completely failed. So, you know, there's definitely a strong belief that like they can be helpful in certain circumstances, but they can also like really mess you up if they want to.
You're maybe it's just again a government conspiracy. Like we're gonna tell them it's a fairyland here, right here, and we have to go around it, and we're gonna put a military base here. No, I'm just kidding.
I think people
I'm
would notice
kidding.
That in
yeah,
Ireland.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I don't think Ireland's quite big enough to get away with that.
So what about, we've talked about fairies and aliens, but in very similar elementals. Tell us how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because, you know, I'm so going to make myself sound really old when I say this. 20, 30 years ago, nobody talked about elementals. It was just it wasn't a thing. You know, you had spirits, you had fairies, you had ghosts, you had shadow people, you had all this other stuff going on. But it seems like within the last 10 or 15 years, this idea of elementals is kind of really coming in. And it is based in an older concept, like the idea of elemental beings mm-hmm. is very, very old. But the way that it's sort of being used now is this sort of new take on it. And a lot of people, when they're talking about elementals, they're talking sort of about this more folkloric idea of fairies. They're just giving it sort of a different name.
A witch? Can it be witches? No?
That's you know, people always blame witches. Witches
I know,
get
right?
for everything.
Right.
But yeah, we've definitely seen people talking about like elementals haunting places and elementals causing people problems. So it seems to just be like a new way to explain or to talk about some of these ideas that have actually been around for a really long time.
Hmm. Yeah, you don't hear much about elementals. I mean, even on my show, we don't. That's not a word that you hear often.
Yeah, it's definitely more than it used to be, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used. Never hear it. Right. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to the chat room because we have about less than 10 minutes left. So I want to make sure my co-host get a chance to ask some questions.
It's gone by quick.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to have to come back because there's so much more we can talk about. Amisha, Morgan, what's the most fascinating finding? I don't know. You've discovered so far in your research. It's not my reading. That's just the way it's typed.
Oh, that would be so hard because there's so much.
Not one or two stick out just like, oh, my God.
I'm trying to think. Well, I don't know if this is the most fascinating finding, but tying this back into the whole Halloween thing, there's a belief in several different places in parts of Ireland that any sort of wild berries that are left after the night of Halloween are off limits to humans. They belong to the good folk because there's this type of fairy or spirit called the Pooka, and he goes around and either spits or pees on them all. So they are not good for humans after that. If you eat them, you'll get sick.
That sounded like Uncle Bob.
I just, when I read that, I thought it was a really fascinating way to like reinforce this. Like you don't take that because it doesn't belong to humans anymore, but
right.
You know, give it such a gross backstory that no one's gonna want to try.
Right. You know, those one people are just gonna go, I'm gonna eat it anyway.
Yeah, probably. There's always
always one.
Yeah. But there's seriously so much fascinating material out there.
Oh, for sure. Like your books, like I said, there's tons of them. You can get them on Amazon. This is Morgan Daimler, by the way, and she's kind of an expert on Irish myth and magical practices and fairies and all kinds of great subjects. And we started off talking about kind of the Celtic influence on Halloween. So, you know, this is we kind of tying this all together because, you know, it's fascinating and there's a lot going on. Lot has gone on in Ireland over the last millennial. So, well, we have, let's see, Star Brother says, fairies did not make the crop circles in the UK. Extraterrestrial did. Good for you. I love when you make
like
a statement.
I said, passionate opinions.
I love it.
You know, which is great. I actually think it's really wonderful when people like dig into this stuff and get really, really excited about it.
And Liz was like, I think the Celts are still thriving in people's hearts. And then I think later down here, she said something about, is there a town that is specifically Celtic in Ireland? Is there anybody is there a town that's majority still follow the
roots?
Well,
I mean, like I said, Celtic, when we're talking about Celtic, we're really talking about the languages,
right,
with the culture. Because it's not so much a genetic thing per se,
right?
Because that gets super complicated. But you know, Irish is definitely still a language that's spoken in Ireland, which would be that language. There's places, particularly on the west coast, they're called the Gaeltacht, which are where people still predominantly speak Irish as opposed to English. So those I guess would be the place is an answer to that question, that you kind of still have that language. And the thing with language, I realize this is a bit of a digression, but to clarify why I'm focusing on language to answer that question, language and culture are really intrinsically connected because language is how we express ourselves. It's, you know, we have idioms, we have all these layers in it. So when you have a language, that's how you express your culture, how you, share and convey things. It's kind of in that. There's an expression in Irish, Tirgan Adam, Tirgan Tenga, which I think I just said backwards, Tirgan Tenga, Tirgan Adam, which is a culture without a language is a culture without a soul, basically. So, you know, to really dig in and to find that older culture, you kind of have to tie it directly into the language, I think. I'm also a passionate proponent of the Irish language, though, because it is a language that's on the decline. So.
Oh, yeah. And I like I said, I love the accent. It's just, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But like I said, my strongest DNA is, I think it's Irish, Scottish, and then Germanic. So, yeah. But I'm a mutt.
Good fun blend.
I'm a mutt. Seriously, the list is like 20. It's like I'm a mutt. Amber says, is it true anything about a link between shrooms and fairies or the other side?
I mean, there's a lot of discussion about it. I don't know that it's one of those things we could say is definitively true. There definitely is a connection with mushroom circles, fairy rings. It is interesting to note this time of year in Ireland, there are some interesting mushrooms that are gathered by people. So, you know, there is that going on. And there are people who kind of speculate that different types of mushrooms in Western Europe were used for like, basically psychonaut purposes for people to, you know, to try to intentionally have these spiritual or psychoactive experiences, which would definitely tie into fairies. So.
Have you ever had one of those mushrooms?
I have not.
I haven't either.
They've actually been recommended to me because I get migraines, and I guess now that's a thing.
Back in the day, it was like, bad, you know. Now it's like, yeah, I'll try a couple. I've never tried anything, but I've always wanted to just anything natural, maybe I'd try, but I'm such a control freak when it comes to my mind. I don't know if I could let go. I mean, so maybe I should try it, but all right. Last question from our audience here. Oh, wait a minute. Scotty said, I ate mushrooms and the grass was like seeing heaven. Well, yep. I wish we could film that. You know, couldn't you imagine if we could film our visions? Oh, God, that'd be kind of cool.
It would be. I think it would be hard to convey it the way it was being experienced at the time.
Right.
I mean, like I said, I haven't actually done it, so.
Yeah.
But I imagine.
Same here. All right, Star Brother, last question. Are there any differences between elves and fairies?
That is a really excellent question.
It is a great question.
It depends a little on sort of what approach you're going with. Technically, no. Because the two words have kind of been synonyms for a really long time. If we really want to get into it, then you know, you can kind of argue that elf is a term that's used more in like the Norse and Germanic cultures. And that's kind of how we get it into English and in England. Whereas fairy, even though it's from the French and that it got brought into England, has kind of become applied a lot to the particularly Celtic cultures. So I guess we could at best or worst say that they're like cousins, the two.
Kissing cousins.
There's a lot of similarities.
I wonder if there's any where they've mixed, you know, if they've
probably
they've had to.
I mean they're willing to intermix with humans, which
says
something about their standards. No offense.
right.
As I
maybe they get drunk on, they get drunk and they're like, let's go get a human. Yeah. I have to say this has been a great conversation. I hope you come back because there's so many other questions that we could talk about, like the black-eyed children, not the black-eyed peas, but the black-eyed children. And we could, there's so many different folklores that we could talk about. So definitely you'll have to come back. I would love that.
Yes, this was a lot of fun. And Halloween's my favorite holiday, so I appreciate getting a chance to talk about it for a while.
Well, next week we're going to be doing, having a guy on and doing a seance. So everybody join us, and we hope that you guys will participate like you did today. Morgan, where do people find your books and you and all that stuff?
Sure. So the easiest place to get my books is probably Amazon, which I realize some people hate. Barnes & Noble is another option. Most brick and mortar stores, if you ask, can order them and get them in. Otherwise, in general, you can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on TikTok if you're really feeling adventurous. I actually do have some stuff on academia.edu if you're in a mood for something slightly more academic and dry, I guess we could say. Because I have done a couple presentations at universities.
Oh, that's great.
On this topic. So.
And Scotty, he said, where did pumpkins come from? We kind of talked about that earlier, but they mostly came from their parents. So,
the super short version is turnips are really hard to carve.
Right.
So when the Irish emigrated to America and realized that pumpkins were not hard to carve, it was a logical substitution to do the pumpkins instead of the turnips. And we've actually now exported that back to Ireland. So now they have pumpkins and are carving pumpkins, never used to be a thing over there. So
yeah, if you want to hear more, you can rewatch this and find out a little bit more. But Morgan, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming on Truth Be Told. Definitely you're coming back because we have more to talk about.
Awesome. So. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We really appreciate you for joining us, asking questions, always being part of the chat room and being my co-host. And again, make sure you tune in Mondays for Robert Hensley's Minuteman Report, and then also Wednesdays with Bonnie Burkett. You know, she's more of the spiritual side of Truth Be Told. And again, every Friday right here at 3 o'clock for Truth Be Told, I'm here. Until next time, see you then. Bye-bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media, Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio, Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows. Okay.